What's up, Bulls fans, and welcome to another episode of It's Brewing at McEwen, the season finale slash recap episode tonight. Here with me, I am Adam Cartwright, and with me as always, or not as always, this is actually kind of a rare pairsome for me and or duo for me and Mark. But Mark Giardino, Mark, how you doing, bud?
I'm doing well, man. I'm glad that we actually get to pair up for a show for once.
For real, yeah. It
Right,
feels like it's hardly ever just me and you, right?
right.
Well, it is a big show. It is our season recap. We are going to look at the American Athletic Conference tournament. Also going to talk about some season superlatives, talk about what we liked as we watched throughout this season. And then we'll finish it off with a little NCAA tournament talk. But like I said, jam-packed show, so we're going to get right into it. AAC tournament. Look, it didn't end well. Obviously it only ends well for one team. Well, really two teams if you're UTSA. Nothing really bad happens in the tournament for you, but for everybody else, it's not gonna end well. But I think if you look at it, you say, hey guys, preseason, we're gonna go 2-2 in the ACC tournament or AAC tournament. You're probably gonna take that, and I think that's it's kind of what we have to live with now, right? But do you have any overall thoughts like that, Mark, on the tournament before we break into these games?
Yeah, I think overall as a whole, like you said, we're gonna get more into the specifics of each game. It was obviously a little disappointing to lose game one because when you lose game one, the odds are so stacked against you, and it's just really difficult to win the double elimination format out of the losers bracket. And when that happened, I was like, man, we're really gonna have to respond, buckle down, and they did, rattling off those two wins was really impressive. And so I'm really pleased with the fact they're able to do that. And the final game on Saturday, we'll talk about that, but it was a good battle.
Absolutely. Really a lot of good baseball across the entire tournament. If you had the ability to start watching games, man, it's one of my favorite weeks of the year. You get baseball at 9 a.m. If you have the ability to throw it on a secondary monitor at work, just absolutely fantastic. It's going to keep going on with the AAC or NCAA tournaments that are going on, but we are going to look right into it. Looking back on it now, we ended up starting with probably the hottest team in the tournament. East Carolina starts us off with a 9-4 loss. Unfortunately, Corey Braun takes the loss in that one. Not a memorable matchup for Braun. We'll start with the pitching. What'd you think?
It was unfortunate, obviously, to see the way that East Carolina came out in the top of the first, and they were immediately making loud contact, getting barrels, and it just was not the Corey Braun that you typically see on an average given Friday night. There's a few factors I think that may have went into his performance. I mean, it's the first time all season that he's pitching out of his routine day of Friday. And it was the first time all season that he had to pitch on shorter rest than 1 week. I know that on Friday he had a light load. I mean, he pitched 2 2/3 innings for the last weekend of the regular season. He threw about 40 pitches. Honestly, that was a little more than I thought he would do. I thought he was just going to get an inning just to kind of get some reps. So he did pitch a little more than I expected, and it may have impacted how he performed. And I mean, I think Coach Hanna's made that decision with the best information that he had at the time, and it worked out the way it did. But it's just unfortunate how that game kind of started.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's very easy to look back in hindsight when you see the numbers that he put up that first game and say that maybe that wasn't the right strategy. And that really became kind of the whole story of that first day because we did see a lot of different things going on in terms of who coaches were throwing out there first. First and foremost, well, I'll end with our counterpart, but first I wanted to point out, Tulane, they come out with Michael Lorenzen, who spends most of the year as a primary reliever, right? And then what they would do is if they didn't use him Friday or Saturday, they'd let him start Sunday. But his primary, role in their staff was to be their hot reliever. He comes out day one and throws seven shutout innings against UTSA, which put them on a hot streak. So we did see a lot of different things going on. Coach Hannes chose to take the approach of giving Coach Braun or Corey Braun the light load and then coming back for the start. Our counterpart decided to not throw Ethan Norby at all. Coach Godwin did not throw Norby at all, probably anticipating the back-to-back matchup. I think that's another thing that's a little awkward with ours. We had the four-game set, then we had the game, and so Corey Brun, we played a lot in those last kind of couple weeks. You know, when you go back and look at it, five games. So I think that plays into that as well. You have any final thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that is a factor. I mean, like you mentioned, I was going to bring up that point too, is East Carolina's ace, Ethan Norby, did not pitch at all in Tampa the weekend before the tournament. And yeah, it was a little bit surprising at the time. I was like, oh, what's Norby? Is he okay? Well, he was apparently just being rested for Tuesday, which ended up working out good for them. I mean, he looked really sharp right out of the gate. It was very demoralizing to see your ace get hit hard in the top of the first, and then to see their ace, basically, I think he struck out the side in the bottom of the first, was just completely on
Started
fire.
off very well, yes.
Yeah, like it couldn't have started any worse, the game. The fact that we fought back a little bit was good. And like you mentioned, something I didn't even think about too is like facing the same batting order like Friday and then coming to face them again Tuesday, whereas our guys had not seen Norby at all season, maybe in their whole careers. So
And to Coach Hanna's credit on that, because I do kind of agree with you. There were definitely some similar batters. He did point out the fact that during that weekend, Coach Godwin did use a lot of alternative lineups, and he did use some guys that weekend that maybe didn't play as much. But you also, I mean, it was the same coaching staff in the dugouts, the same guys kind of getting the the scouting tips and seeing it live. And there were some like hitters. You know, Dixon Williams played that whole weekend. He's one of their best hitters. He had a great tournament. So did Braden Burris, which, holy cow, we'll talk about him a little
yeah,
bit later, but
for sure.
goodness gracious. Yeah, listen, as far as Norby goes, actually I mentioned this with the with on the Jay Retcher podcast. Lefties gave us fits all year long, you know, and when Ethan Norby is on, which he's been a little, he's had some consistency issues throughout the season. But when he's on, he's right up in that Corey Braun. He's right up in that Blake Gillespie. He's right up in that tier of just really good dominant pitchers. I think he was dealing with a little something, which is why he only pitched 4.1 in this one, but it wasn't enough to really hold him down because he kind of came back in this tournament and pitched some more and really pitched a lot for him over the regionals.
That's true.
On an offensive side, four runs, not necessarily terrible. Just trying to check the left. We did leave 11 on base. No, that was them. We left six on base. Got some extra base hits from Carlos Hakame, Jackson Mayo, and Brad Keelori in this one. No Sebastian Greco for this entire tournament, so that's probably a storyline for really the whole tournament on the offensive side. But Carter Murphy did kind of produce from an offensive standpoint, not necessarily in this one. What did you think offensively?
Yeah, I think that was another huge storyline coming into the tournament, was the fact that Sebastian Greco was unable to play. That was really unfortunate. I mean, you're looking at truly the only consistent source of home run power in our whole batting order. And when you take that person out of it, it really changes the whole complexion and dynamic of the offense.
Real quick to your point, home run friendly park.
Yeah, exactly. That right field porch is definitely gettable, and I feel like he would have probably hit two or three. Granted, his replacement did do that too, so we can't really complain too much about any potential drop off because Carter Murphy answered that call pretty loud and proud. But still, you don't want to go into a season defining tournament without your best power hitter. It's unfortunate that happened, and hopefully he's feeling better now. But yeah, there was a few good performances that day offensively, regardless, though. I mean, Matt Rose went 3 for 4, which ended up kind of being a theme that tournament, that he was hitting well. And you'll hear more about what he did later. But Carlos Hakame had 3 hits. Those were kind of the multi-hit guys of the day. Jackson Mayo did have a double, driving a couple runs to cut the deficit in the fifth inning. But yeah, nothing really too crazy offensively to speak about, but we'll have some fireworks to talk about, I think, in the next couple of games.
Absolutely. Real quick, you mentioned Matt Rose, hometown Clearwater, Florida. So you want
Yeah.
to say returning home, but not really returning home because he never really left home, but just kind of went back to his old neighborhood,
Right.
and really had a big tournament. And it started with this one, man. He, three hits. Again, really, really productive. Marcus Brodell. Brodell had a really productive game. I mean, a couple of walks, but again, lefty on lefty matchup with Norby early. So you know he was going to be limited. But yeah, it was good to see. It was good to see Matt Rose kind of break out and have a great
Yeah.
tournament. He got
So
that going. He got that going here.
yeah, so end up losing
Any?
that game. Oh, sorry, I was just
Go
gonna
ahead. Yeah, I was going to say, do you have any final thoughts on the game?
I'm just gonna give a summary for the listener. Like, end up losing that game 9-4 in total. At one point you trailed 8-0. So it was a pretty
Story of the tournament, right? Was we fell behind early and had to battle back. I mean, it just felt
yes.
like for one reason or another, tonight or this night, not tonight, this night, I believe you could say that was probably had a lot to do with ECU coming out with their hair on fire and really playing and us not matching that energy. That's not to say it was solely what ECU did. I think we played a role in that. We didn't match their energy at all. They
Right.
came out and played with their hair on fire, but that was kind of the story, right? For one reason or another, we fell behind and had to battle back. Sorry for the interjection. Go ahead and finish your thought.
Yeah, no, that I think that's pretty much what I was gonna say, honestly. So
Sorry.
yeah. No, you're good, you're good.
All right. Well, we will move on now to some better games, right? These next
Yep.
couple are a little more fun to talk about, starting
Definitely.
with Wichita State University. We beat them 3-4 on this one. Austin Newton picks up the win. Minor storyline of this game. Couple of players actually left the tops at hall or in the locker room or hotel or somewhere. The black tops did not make it to the game, which I would admit is not never, I mean, it's not really a terrible thing, especially if you have an alternate uniform. It's probably a better option. But they decided just to go with the black t-shirts, which, hey, might have felt a little better in the heat. Either way, Jack Nedrow has has 7.1 innings in this one. What did you think of the pitching performance?
Yeah, no, that's funny. I mean, I was trying to think something like that must have happened.
I did see that on Twitter somewhere that a couple of the
Okay.
uniforms got left, and that was the reason they decided, hey, you know what? We'll just take them all off. We all got our undershirts. They got numbers. That's all you need, baby. Let's play some baseball. I love the mentality. I didn't like I Full disclosure, listeners, I really do not like our black uniforms. It really doesn't matter because my opinion doesn't as far as what our uniforms are. But, all it needs is a number. I love the mentality that all you need is a number. Let's go play some ball. And I think it showed, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, they definitely fought, like kind of like nothing is going to bother us today attitude, no, it worked out. But from a pitching standpoint, Jack Nedrow was pretty dominant like the whole game. I mean, he was pitching great. They really didn't get to him at all until the eighth inning when we had a 3-1 lead. And he ends up giving up a 2-run home run, which results in the game being tied, which you kind of hate to see that when a guy has basically been throwing 1-run shutout ball all day long. But he was the hot hand, and they figured, give him the opportunity to ride this out. He ends up, struggling there in that eighth inning, but fortunately we have our back end of the bullpen kind of stud right now is Austin Newton. And big guy can come in, throw 95 plus, really just kind of throw a wrench in the other team's plans. And that's exactly what he did. He pitched 1.2 innings there at the end of the game and ends up picking up the win because of some help that was got received on offense, which we'll talk about. But yeah, any thoughts on pitching yourself?
Absolutely. In my little small baseball community world with the guys I play with, we call this a vulture win. Because Jack Nedrow did all the work here, man. He pitched a fantastic game,
Oh, yeah.
7.1 with the seven strikeouts.
Yeah.
And Austin Newton gets to come in, face five guys, pick up the W.
All right.
But it is, it's one of those things where it's nothing, it's nobody's fault. Nedrow needed a little more offense early, didn't get it. Can't really fault him because he gave up a two-run home run late. It's still a very quality start overall. Again, just doesn't get the win. Not hitting on Newton at all. Love you, buddy. Love that you came in, did your thing, and picked it up. It's going to be fantastic having him come back. I do like him as a closer. I think he has a classic closer look. I think he has an aura. I don't know how to say that word about him when he comes in. And I think a closer needs that because when you're coming in, when the closer's coming in, there's a feeling that needs to come, and it really needs to go to the other dugout. The other the whoever the closer is needs to kind of bring this, like, for lack of a better term, this oh shit feeling. Like, ah,
Yes, definitely.
Like, dang, like, we had a shot, and now we got this guy. And I think Newton has that. I think his presence on the mound, his fastball, that sinker that dives in, I think he gives that. And I love that out of a closer.
For sure.
But yeah, man, let's talk about the offense. Only four runs, but there was some fireworks. I'll let you break right into it.
Yeah, I mean, the bottom of the fifth, in order to tie the game. That came when the bases were loaded and Carter Murphy got hit by a pitch. And this is kind of the beginning of the theme of Carter Murphy having a great tournament. Just needed to get hit by that pitch and everything else kind of fell into place. In the seventh inning, he got an RBI single, which made the game 3-1 because another run had come in before off of a Lance triple reach base via error. But now you're having Carter Murphy already with a couple RBIs. And then, as we mentioned, we had a 3-1 lead heading into the eighth inning. We lose it. And then, I mean, I remember like just watching the game and like seeing that ball go over the fence. And I was like, dang, like that just happened so quick. You know, we spent all day playing with this lead. And then in the blink of an eye, it's gone. But speaking of blink of an eye, as soon as Matt Rose comes up to the plate in the bottom of the eighth, you have the lead right back. So that's pretty awesome.
At bat of the night obviously goes to Matt Rose, and then what he did there in the bottom of the eighth, just situation. I mean, really one of the bigger at bats of the whole year, I think, if you looked at the situation there, tied elimination game. He doesn't do that. We're kind of right there, backs against our wall, might be going home.
Right.
He has that at bat. We're like, oh, we got Newt on the mound and we got a lead now. Let's go.
Yeah.
We're gonna play some baseball tomorrow.
Yeah.
So just all considering, that could have been one of the bigger at bats of the year.
Oh, yeah. And the fact that he did it too, as like I said, so quickly, he was a leadoff hitter that inning. I mean, that was just huge. I mean, you needed
And
that.
it was not a squeak by the wall short porch home run either. It was an absolute tank shot. Absolutely, it was great. Like you said, Carter Murphy kind of started to get things going, had the two RBI single. And really, I mean, Jackson Mayo with a hit and Lance Triple. I mean, just a pitcher's duel for this one, and you really don't see that out of Wichita State. But sometimes you turn it on when you have to turn it on, and they did. Just
I think
I don't know.
the kid that pitched for them, I think that's the kid that pitched good against us during the regular season too.
He did. He did. You
And
just
strange.
I, it's hard not to look at it though and think maybe we missed some opportunities in this one.
I mean, he
We had four walks and four innings
Six,
there, six.
yeah. How many
But
left on base do we have? Seven?
seven left on base. But in the end, man, we pulled off, we pulled off the win. Had to get on the winning
For
side of
sure.
things.
For sure.
We kept it on going. Do you have any final thoughts on this one before we move on to Charlotte? Probably the best game of the tournament, I think.
No, let's go right to Charlotte.
Go right to Charlotte. All right, like I said, I think this was our best win, our game of the tournament, from a Bulls perspective, and I think from an entertainment perspective. I think if you were just watching this baseball game, you probably would have enjoyed yourself. Austin Newton picks up the rare back-to-back win, in the 7-6 victory. What did you think about the pitching in this one? Started off with Kling.
Yeah, I mean, this was a fun game. I mean, I got to attend this one in person. Got to drive down to Clearwater after work on Friday. Just a really fun experience being there. You know, I was with my cousin and one of my friends. Like, it was just a great, great day, honestly. But just talking about the game, like when you see that Corey Kling is going to start, I mean, it made a lot of sense. I mean, the guy had been pitching fantastic the last few weeks of the season, so I was like, okay, perfect, you know. But you know, he struggled, and unfortunately, it's going to happen from here and there. It'll be a learning experience for him. You know, probably, I think his. I can't remember. Actually, no, we didn't play in the tournament last year, so that was his first experience of tournament baseball at the college level. It's a lot of pressure when you start a game like that, especially when you're not somebody that normally starts games. So it'll be a learning experience for him. And then to follow up, Kling, you also had Ada Longoria come in, which also naturally seemed like a good, it was a good decision at the time, given the fact that he had also been on a hot streak of pitching well. But he just struggled as well. Again, first experience pitching in a tournament for him too. So just a little challenging for those guys, which got the Bulls into a hole early, you know, like went down 3-0 after the first inning. But the response in the top of the second, I think, was key. And obviously we'll get into that with the hitting, but the good thing from the pitching standpoint in this game was the way that probably our two highest leverage arms that were available that day, who were rested enough to pitch that day, they came in just when they needed to. Bryce Archie entered the game in the third inning and was just lights out. I mean, he pitched 2 2/3, no runs, 2 strikeouts, no hits, only one base runner. I mean, he just comes in and just does a job. I mean, I got to chat with him during the Fowler Avenue podcast and kind of asked him about what helped him this season. And one thing was he had developed a He calls it the one seamer that he developed with Coach Dan Schlereth, basically a sinker. And you could tell that's why he's part of the reason that helps him induce ground balls pretty quickly and get quick outs. You see a lot of Bryce Archie innings that, like, you blink your eye and there's 3 outs. And you just love to see that as a coach, as a fan, as you can even tell, like, the energy when he got into the game, like, the defense behind him was like fired up because they got to do their jobs, and they got to do their jobs quickly and efficiently and get right back to the dugout. I just remember seeing, like, Brad Keelory kind of like tap him on the back, like, hell, heck yeah, man, let's go. Like, right after he got those 2 outs in the third inning, that was really cool. And then Austin Newton, who we've already talked about a little bit, was also awesome. I mean, 4 innings out of the bullpen during like a very, very tight game to do what he did. Was so clutch. Sixth inning, seventh inning, eighth inning to throw up those 3 zeros to allow the Bulls to enter the ninth inning with a 2-run lead. It's awesome. But
Absolutely.
yeah, go ahead on pitching.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'll start at the top. I thought this game was really unfortunate for Corey Kling. I thought, he's never really had the most overpowering strikeout stuff, but he has had get you out stuff from the day he stepped on campus. Now, I realize there's that period of time where things got a little wonky on him, but when you remove that, he has really always had, and that's not saying he doesn't have strikeout stuff. I think he does have pretty moderate strikeout numbers, but he doesn't have that Corey Braun kind of strikeout stuff where when things get behind, you feel like he can kind of go to some stuff to get some guys out. And I thought in this one, we had some defensive blunders. One was by him, so he's not absolved of it. Got to field your position. I think he threw one over second base here. Should have got an out there. Compounded that, we had a bunt defense blunder. I think Carter Murphy ended up getting the error on it. I don't believe it was really his error, but whatever happens, there was a bunt that got laid down. We didn't get an out. So that stuff kind of happens, and then usually when that stuff happens, things compound. And I think that's what happened to him there in that first inning. And then we kind of got down to Bryce and Newt before we kind of got things settled. Really unfortunate. You mentioned the sinker, and it is interesting because I talked about Newton Sinker, and that's what he really works off of well. And you can kind of, I'm hoping that Bryce is going to kind of go to that, because guys with really hard fastballs that can throw that sinker, you look at what Paul Skenes is doing in the pros now. His
Yeah.
best pitch is not his 100 mile an hour fastball. I promise you, it's that 97 mile an hour sinker that he just dives into right-handed hitters' ankles. They don't have a chance.
Right.
Same thing with Austin Newton, and you can see it in his work. Austin Newton, I believe. I'll just do game by game. In the first game, he got five outs, struck out three, two ground balls, no fly outs. It's that sinker working. In this game, he gets 12 outs, six of them are strikeouts, one fly out, five ground outs. It's that sinker working, right? It's
Wow.
guys beating that ball down into the ground.
Yeah.
And hats off to him. He came back out, gave us four strong innings after going the day before,
Yeah.
which is, that's never a guarantee. But I, again, that's kind of the story for me. It's really just kind of Corey Kling, the defensive blunders got him behind. We never really got back on top until we got it down into, like you said, with Bryce and Newt. But man, let's talk about the offense, because we got some stuff going in this one. We did leave 12 on base. When you score seven and leave 12 on base,
Man,
man, things
that
are
is
cooking.
crazy.
I'll let you kick right off with it, man. What'd you think?
Yeah, wow. I didn't realize we had 12 left on base. Man, that's something else. But yeah, no, it was good that they got a quick response in the top of the second. Lance Triple hitting a double down the left field line. Got to see that. Carlos Hakamy drawing a walk with the bases loaded. Drove in a run as well. And then we get to the point where we're down 5-2 after 3 innings. But at that point, it kind of felt like, oh man, this is 3-run deficit all over again. But Carter Murphy had a quick response in the fourth inning, was able to hit a home run to left field, and just being there, seeing him hit that, man, that thing got out quick. He really drove into that ball really well. Matt Rose continued his great week. Got an RBI single. Marcus Brodell absolutely smoked a ball to center field. Could have been a home run. It was pretty close. I mean, if it wasn't such a big ballpark in center field, it's a home run in some other places for sure. And that's how we ended up tying the game after 4 innings. And it really wasn't until the eighth that Rafael Betancourt had that clutch single to right field. Kind of just, I think he even said in his post-game press conference, like he was happy to get the break of like the ball just chopping and kind of just chopping right through the infield. It wasn't the prettiest hit in the world, but it got the job done. And that gave us a 7-5 lead in the eighth inning that Newton was able to hold.
Clutch at bat from a veteran hitter. That's what you need if you're gonna come out of tournaments, especially in games like this when you're trying to battle back. I guess it's as good a time any to talk about this point, man. We saw this all year from this team, and it's something that is kind of when you're talking about, what are some visible steps as you're climbing the ladder to being a successful program. I think this is one of them, because I never felt like this team was ever out of games. We fell behind in the first inning a lot more than anybody wants to do throughout a season. But what I really loved about this team is that, yes, there were a few games that got away, right? We got run ruled, but there were a lot of times that we just saw this team just chip away, battle back, battle back, battle back. And, even the games they ended up losing at the end, we had the winning run or the tying run at the plate. We were competitive. And I think that's what you saw here. This happened to be one of the ones where we get the big hit that we needed, and we get the and we get the runs to pull off the win. But just gritty, just a real gritty win, especially from an offensive perspective. Because like I said, the defensive kind of let it down there in the beginning, and just grinding it out. It's good. It's good to see from a cultural standpoint and where this program is heading. It's one of those wins that you like to watch. Do you have any final thoughts on this one before we go into that final game with the ECU?
No, just that it was a fun time for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, all fun times must come to an end, and they did for the Bulls on that faithful Sunday. Look, again, like I said, if you'd have told me, hey, you're going to be playing for a chance to go, play for the tournament, if you told us that maybe the week after we had let Coach Mole go, you're like, sign us up.
Sure.
Yeah, where do we have to put it down? A
Mm-hmm.
little different in this one. We actually jumped ahead. Maybe we didn't really know what to do with ourselves at that point because it
What's
all went
this? A
downhill
lead?
from there, right? But we'll start with the pitching. Landon Yorick gets the start in this one. I'll let you kick off.
Yeah, this was an interesting one for sure. I mean, to be able to get out to a 4-0 lead early, credit to Landon Yorick, the way he came out, putting up zeros in the first, second, and third innings. It was reminiscent of what he did at UF, where he made a spot start, and ultimately the Bulls won that game. And this one could have ended, in a good way like that, but the top of the fourth, where he gave up, I think it was a 3-run home run. That kind of put a damper on, I guess, the start as a whole. But you could say also that he did still lead the game with the Bulls having the lead, so that was good. But one thing I'll say is he got his pitch count up really high. 80 pitches for Landon Yorick was, I think, by far the most he's had all season. I think when he pitched like four innings against UF, I think it was like maybe in the 40s. So that may have had an impact on him,
And he
but
was not fresh.
yeah, because hadn't he pitched, which game did he pitch
I
earlier
believe he
that?
pitched game one.
Let me check.
2 innings in game one.
Wow, 39 pitches that day
39
too.
pitches, yeah.
Wow, so you're looking at him throwing like 120 pitches within a span of like 5 days.
Not
That's
his
hard.
typical workload in a week.
No, that's tough. That's really tough. But credit to him for at least getting us out of the fourth with a lead. And then Corey Brown came in. This was interesting too. I mean, what did he do for us on Tuesday? He threw 64 pitches. Okay.
64.
And then he comes back on Saturday, which
Same thing, I
is,
believe, right?
3 days
Wow.
rest, 64
64
pitches both
pitches, yep.
times. That's interesting. No, I think it's like responsible usage. I mean, 64 pitches twice for a starter is it's fair. There's nothing unreasonable about that at all. It's just, I think that just being off of his normal, just like I pitch on Friday and rest a week and being off that normal routine, it could definitely impact you. You have certain routines that you're kind of already set in. But he ends up giving up four earned runs in 4 1/3. But he had his strikeout stuff. He had 6 Ks. He came into the game really, really looking sharp right away. His kind of downfall in that game did occur in his later innings as well. So you could see that for Landon and for Corey, the fatigue had to have played a factor. Don't forget that it was hot outside. They're pitching twice in a week at pretty decent volumes of pitches. It's just tough, and that this is kind of could give you a couple of takeaways. One takeaway is win the first game of the tournament, so you avoid a situation like that. Second takeaway is this program, this team has to keep developing pitching depth or recruiting pitching depth or however we want to do it. And this season was a great start in that direction for sure. But, if you can, the goal, and I know it is because I know that, Coach Hannes and Coach Schlereth are very, dedicated to having a great pitching staff here. But ultimately, you want to have like maybe 10 names you can really kind of trust in these spots, It's much easier said than done, but that's what they're working towards. And if you do have that depth, you don't have to, I think you could balance a load a little more. But I'll let you kind of talk about pitching, and you could touch on the rest of the names as well.
Yeah, I mean, Nolan Bernard comes in, faces a batter, gets an out. Strikeout, six pitches, it was really good to see him come in. I had to be a big spot for him. At the time, I think, we had just went down. Ace is coming out. Really need to get an out. And so I think that's huge, especially for a true freshman, young true freshman, right? Isn't he shouldn't he be graduating or something
Yeah,
along these times?
exactly.
So that was a big spot. You really like to see that. Yeah, but I think it all just the story for this game in terms of a pitching, it really just all goes back to those first two. And it's kind of like you said with Yorick, hats off, man. You came in and you battled. I think he got into some uncharted waters. And things got a little wonky on him there, three walks and a hit by pitch. And then veteran teams do what veteran teams do. And that, don't get it twisted. Just because ECU did not have the year that anybody expected ECU to have, I mean, the reason that they didn't meet expectations is because everybody looked at that roster and said, hey, there's some veteran players on this team that can really play. And sometimes they get you. Aiden Irby, or I don't know what his first name is, but Irby.
Austin Irby, yeah.
Austin, yeah. Listen, he gave Florida fits in the regional. He got hot. He had a big hit with the 3-run home run. Dixon Williams is another one. That's a really good bat that had a really big hit when they needed it. And that was kind of the story. Like you said, we got into some uncharted waters. They had some big hits. And then it is what it is. But that does not mean that we did not battle, because we did, from an offensive standpoint. Brought this one back, got a few home runs out of this one as well, according to some or including some back-to-back action. But I'll let you go ahead, tell us all about that one.
Yeah, no, there was definitely some good offense here for us. I mean, obviously, to be able to start the game up 4-0 after 2 innings is great. That was attributed to Marcus Brodell RBI single, Carter Murphy driving in a run, Carlos Hakamay driving in a run early. And then that allowed us to go up 4-0. And crazy enough, I mean, we ended up falling behind 6-4 after, like, in the middle of the seventh inning or so. But similar to the other night, getting a quick response is what we got out of Brad Killory hitting a solo home run, Carter Murphy hitting a solo home run, each in the seventh inning, to make it a tie ball game again, which was pretty awesome. And then we really went into the ninth inning with a tie game. I mean, it was, yeah, 6-6. And wow, I forgot about that. Corey Braun was still in the ninth. Yeah, okay. So Corey Braun was in the ninth. Gives up the home run to Braden Burris. And I guess the rest is kind of history from there. But we even fought back a little bit in the bottom of the ninth, even though we were down by 3 runs. We had an RBI double from Carter Murphy, who, again, had a great week. But yeah, what are your thoughts on the offense of just the game?
Yeah, I think I think this is the game where you were talking about the pitching depth it showed, because what we really needed was for Austin Newton to not have thrown 4 innings the game before.
Yeah,
You know,
exactly.
we really need him to be a, you know what, we're gonna throw you an inning, but we're gonna throw you 4 straight days right here, bud, because if we have a lead late, you're coming in to shut it down. I think if we don't have, if Newton's healthy or not healthy, but if Newton is, you know, if he throws 2 innings that inning or an inning and, you know, a piece in that game before, I think he's coming in the ninth and it's not Corey Braun, and we might have a different story. You know, but it's just like you said, it's one of those things. From an offensive perspective, I do want to talk about Carter Murphy here. Take the time now, because he had a big tournament, back to back days with home runs. And you mentioned the power when he really when connects. He has a power potential that's a little different than most on our roster. And certainly when you take it, who's coming back? I really and truly, him and Lance Triple are really the only two names that I think when I think of light tower power that we have. And I think you saw that on display, and you saw where that comes in handy when you get into a hitter's park that he can really start driving. You know, he didn't get a lot of consistent playing time. I'm hoping maybe he gets some more. I really hope he kind of takes the first base. I'm not really sure. You know, I tried to look into it a little bit. He didn't play really much at all for Indiana State, and I think when he did, it was as a DH. So I was really trying to get an idea, you know, did he come up as a third baseman and now we're transitioning into first? I think he's a really good first baseman. What's kind of crazy is what I'm about to say is Brad Killory and Carter Murphy went back to back home runs, but I don't even think that was the greatest Brad Murphy Carter Murphy connector Bradke Laurie, Cardi Murphy connection that we had. I mean, the play up the middle where Carter or Laurie makes the dive, awkward position, has to get rid of it, throws it kind of way off into the side. And you see Murphy throw the slide out there. That's a big league pick, man. That pick does not just happen. Carter's got some hands. Probably again needs to work on the instinctual things. We saw the bunt defense breakdown. Again, I don't think that was completely on him, but you really don't know because maybe it was a communication thing. Maybe he wasn't supposed to be charging, right? But there was obviously a disconnect with a first baseman being so deep and our second baseman not really being in a position to take the throw. Somebody was off. You don't know who that is, but again, that's an instinctual thing. Another instinctual thing, he had the ground ball that he thought he picked up, didn't end up leaving it behind. Again, that's some instinct. I know it seems so petty, like, oh, how can he just leave it there? But I'm telling you, like, when if you've been a third baseman, right, and you're used to that fielding process of I'm gonna field it, I'm gonna get into a throwing position and throw, the idea of I'm gonna field it and then I'm gonna hold it and run,
Yeah, that's different.
it's a different movement, right? And he just left the ball. Sometimes you just leave the ball. And that's something that I think, we won't see those mistakes next year, especially if he spends this whole time, being the first baseman and really working with the staff. We won't see those mistakes, but with consistent at bats, I think we'll see some real power. I think a comp I threw out in our chat was Joe Genord. I think I could see a Joe Genord type of player out of Carter Murphy, 15 to 20 home runs, and a decent first baseman. So any final thoughts here on this game before we kind of move along? I guess we can kind of wrap up your thoughts on the tournament if you have any.
No, I think we covered the game pretty well. I think yeah, we could kind of I'll start with my tournament recap. So it was pretty interesting, I think, to see East Carolina run through this tournament in the manner that they did. Basically, in our pod of the tournament, they went 3-0 to basically, it's essentially like winning a regional. It's a four team pod, double elim. They did that very efficiently. That allowed them to get to Sunday, where they faced off with Tulane, which is crazy because Tulane had won this tournament 2 years in a row, even though in 2023 their record was like 20-40. Like they were bad. Then last year they were more respectable from a record standpoint, won the whole thing. That was great for them. This year the record was pretty respectable again. They weren't like dominant or anything like that, but I kind of expected ECU to win that day just because of the way that they were just the way they played that week. I mean, I kind of in the middle of the season, I saw their record wasn't that great, but I looked at like their players and their stats, and I was thinking to myself, like, this team does have a lot of talent, a lot of potential, maybe even more talent than some of the East Carolina teams I've seen the last few years that were even better record-wise. We've mentioned some of the names of the players on East Carolina, but you mentioned one of the guys before, Braden Burris, the second baseman. He's a kid
Goodness.
that went to the same high school as head coach Cliff Godwin and enrolled at East Carolina, tried out for the baseball, or he Cliff Godwin told him, don't come to East Carolina because I like you, you're not going to get any playing time here, whatever. Told him to go to a smaller school. He's like, yeah, I'm coming. And he ends up being their starting second baseman, batting almost 400 this year. So my last thought on the tournament is UTSA did exactly what they needed to do. Just like show up, don't get too embarbecued. Just win a game, be respectable, and still get into the NCAA and still get into the NCAA tournament, which is exactly what they did. So, what are your thoughts on the tournament?
I'll start with ECU. I wasn't surprised either. I think when me and John did our recap and we kind of broke down everything about ECU and their season and what it meant for them coming in, I think maybe something that I know I overlooked was the fact that this was probably the least pressure that they had ever felt kind of going into a tournament. You think maybe the last couple of tournaments for them, they were in the UTSA spot where they were already looking past. Right. And so for them, and you think, well, how's that pressure? Well, it is because you don't want to get hurt. You don't want to look terrible. You don't want to, there's a lot of stuff you don't want to do going into the next week, right? That you're thinking about that nobody else is thinking about. This year they didn't have that. It was, hey guys, we're gonna play some ball and we're either gonna keep playing or we're not, you know? And there's a lot of freedom in that. And I think they took advantage of that. You mentioned they had, you know, a lot of good talent, a lot of veteran talent. And when veteran talent starts playing free and loose, and then you get freshman talent that maybe are either accustomed to the moment or are too green to understand it, you know, which is a
Yeah.
that's a value. You know, it happens in the pros. You look at that rookie and they're like, wow, he's doing so great in the playoffs. How's he handling all this pressure? Oh, because he hasn't thought about it. Like, it just hasn't popped up in their mind that what they're doing, you know what I'm saying? So that's an advantage too. And that's what I think you're getting out of Braden Burris. And something else is crazy. Like, how did everyone miss on Braden Burris? He had zero stars. Baseball does stars. I don't know if they do. All I know is Perfect Game has their rating, but he had
Yeah.
zero rating, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Zero offers. I read this on the internet. You know, Abraham Lincoln told us everything on the internet's true. But I think his dad actually played ball with Godwin. Like
Yeah, I think that's
they
right.
knew each other, right? And they went back. And so Godwin telling him, hey, don't come here. You think it's, hey, maybe it's just like this courtesy, like, hey, man, like, I really don't know
Yeah,
if I have a spot for him.
exactly.
But he still said, hey, you know, we're boys. I got a spot for him. I mean, if you're looking back, like, thank God you did. Holy cow, he's a 400, near 400 hitter, plays a great second base. I mean, runs
And
like the wind.
18 stolen bases, 1,000 OPS practically.
I mean, just an absolute stud that you're gonna have in your lineup for two more seasons because he's gonna like I saw on Twitter today because you know Godwin's already on Twitter talking about SEC schools texting his players and all that stuff. But I did see that someone did confirm Braden Burris is not entering the portal. He's coming back. He's gonna be at ECU. So there's gonna be a there's a connection. Braden Burris isn't going anywhere. So Bulls fans, we're gonna see him in purple for two more seasons. And it's gonna be fantastic. Not really.
From a pure baseball
Tulane.
standpoint, yes, but from a Bulls
Oh
fan
yeah,
standpoint, no.
from the fact that we're gonna follow him for two more seasons. He's gonna be fun to watch. And he is fun to watch. I'm one of those people that really doesn't get too much behind the gorilla ball where we're just gonna stand up there and mash it. I kind of like to see an athletic guy that can spray it around, make some exciting things happen, you know. Steal a base, throw it into right. We got the circus. That's exciting stuff to me. And that's the type of player he is. That's what he can give you. If I am Tulane, the first thing I am doing or would have done is I would be trying my damnedest to schedule a early season tournament in Clearwater. And I am inviting every AAC or ACC and SEC team that will come with the best
I
RPIs because you play your best baseball in Clearwater. I don't know what it is,
know.
but they love them some Clearwater. So I'd be scheduling me a tournament. I'd be playing as many games. I'd be two tournaments in Clear. I'd be playing 10 or 12 home games a season in Clearwater and getting anybody and everybody that wants to come. Because yeah, something about it, man. They turn it on. You know, they turn it on. It's something. It's a testament to the coaching staff there at Tulane. They really know how to get the players right when they need to get right. And like, you know, they had some veterans too. I mentioned Lombardi. He turned it on when he had to turn it on. He wasn't expected to go 7 innings and of shutty, and he did against UTSA. He probably had the best performance against UTSA in the last month. And that includes two games against Texas. Earlier, did they play? Yeah, they had to play him twice. You know, that, you know, so crazy, crazy, crazy. Like you said, UTSA did what they had to do. They stayed healthy, they stayed hot. They needed to keep their offense hot, and they did. We saw what happens when their offense wasn't hot, right? When Lombardi really shut them down. Tulane ended up getting them there. But that was the last time, you know, anybody really got them was Tulane. But yeah, it's really all I got for the tournament. I guess we can kind of move on and do our season recap superlatives, right?
Yes, do it.
Yeah. All righty then. Let's go ahead and start with our offensive player of the year. Just full disclosure, everyone, we all kind of agreed on most of these. However, this is the one where we've kind of got two candidates that we're going to kind of talk about. And so we're going to put it out there and we'll let you guys decide who you think the real one is. But we think there's two really deserving candidates. Mark, I'll let you go ahead and start with one.
Yeah, I think I'll make the case for Sebastian Greco. And I think I make that case because he did something for this offense that nobody else was really able to do. He had twice as many home runs as the second most on our team. So he had 14 home runs. His OPS was the highest on the team at 982. He hit 281, solid batting average. He walked more times than he struck out, which, I mean, for a power hitter, it's very rare to see that. I don't see that very often at all. So, even though Marcus Brodell had a fantastic season, and I actually love who he is as a hitter too, I do have to give the nod to Greco.
I'm actually going to go with Marcus Brodell. He just had a real stellar season. He was really consistent for us all year long. I felt like he had some really, really big at bats and some big hits when we needed it. Does have a little bit of does a little bit of power. He's only three home runs, but what's crazy is like his three home runs, they're not cheap shots, man. When he hits it out, it's I mean, the ones coming to my mind, I think he hit one to dead center and it went about halfway up the batter's eye. An absolute tank shot.
Oh,
But three.
dude, there was one to right field. Oh my God.
I remember that one too.
That was absolutely I think that was the furthest ball I've ever hit seen from the red ever.
I mean, so you see that guy, right? And you're like, oh no, he's only got three home runs. Like, no, there's some power there. 330 batting average on the season. I believe 64 hits. Did that lead the? Is that our leader? Yep, 64 hits. Like I said, just the consistency. He had some bases. He stole some bases as well. I do understand the argument for Greco, right? The home run is a big thing. But like I said, when I introduced this, I think there were two quality candidates. It's been fun for four years watching Marcus play.
One thing
We're
I want to
just gonna.
mention on him is like I really hope that one of the Major League Baseball teams like sees what this kid's potential is, right? I mean, three home runs is what he had this year in college. Okay, but like he could be a double digit home runs guy in pro baseball. Like he has that power, he has that size, he has a very level swing that just hits line drives. And when you add even more strength to that as you get older and more mature, that actually can end up being home runs, those line drives that you're hitting. I mean, he's got such a level just. And his ability to hit backside, he has a lot of opposite field extra base hits. Yeah, he had 13 doubles this year. I can almost guarantee you at least half of them were to opposite field.
And people shifted him. I never understood that.
Yeah, I know that's crazy. That was crazy. But he knew how to exploit that for the most part.
He did. He did.
So yeah, that was awesome. Awesome
Hey,
season.
back-to-back seasons of almost, I mean, he had 319 his junior year, 330 as a senior. That's just real consistent production. Congratulations, Marcus and Sebastian on awesome seasons. We'll move on now to our defensive player of the year. I will let you introduce this one.
Yeah, so I think it's a pretty clear choice. I think we both agreed on it. We went with Brad Keylory, shortstop, transferred in from Tennessee, was great for him because he got an opportunity to play every game, which at Tennessee he really didn't. But man, he really best shortstop defensively that I've seen in my 5 years, 4 5 years covering the team. Not only like the ability to consistently make the routine play, which he does, but the range, the instincts and the reflexes. It's a combination of factors, right? It's not just a matter of being like a fast runner. There's plenty of kids playing shortstop that are fast runners, but do you have the baseball IQ to know which way to lean, or are you paying attention to the count and what kind of pitch is being thrown, and do you know the scouting report? And I feel like he is locked in on all that stuff because more often than not, he's getting this like jump and just sprint to the direction he needs to go, like a split second before most shortstops would react like that. And that lets him get to a lot of those crazy plays.
Yeah, I mean, ditto, right? We saw probably, I can think of three or four probably SportsCenter top 10 worthy plays coming out of our shortstop this season. You know, we just talked about the play he made in Clearwater. I think about the play he made week one against Iowa with the little line drive there. He goes deep into the six hole, makes the catch. There's a guy on third that scores right there if he doesn't make that play. We end up winning that game by a run. You know, that matters, right? But just fantastic play. You can't really, when you judge shortstops versus everybody else, you can't really look at the errors because they're going to have, more or as much errors as anybody else. Just nature of play in the position. Not only are you getting a lot of baseballs hit to you, but you're getting a lot of tough plays hit to you as well. Some people like to look at that third base and think that's the longest throw, but some of those throws from shortstop are brutal. And he was just fun to watch all year long from a defensive standpoint. So, congratulations, Bracky Laurie. Like I said, Defensive Player of the Year from Bruin and McEwen. Was absolutely fun, man, to watch you. We popped often when you were making some of those plays. moving on now, Pitcher of the Year, Cy Young Award for the Bulls, however you want to label that in your head. I think it's another one, man. There's probably a real clear choice for this one. Corey Brown, man, had a fantastic season. We talked about him all year long. Really did not have a blemish start until the tournament when things got a little wonky on him, with the scheduling and all of that. But throughout the season was just an absolute rock. Ace, and we hadn't had a true ace for a couple of seasons, a guy you can throw out on Friday night and have absolute confidence in. He's going to go six. There's a chance he just takes this whole game for us. And he did. Got us our first shutout in a couple of seasons. But it's absolutely fantastic. What'd you think?
Yeah, I think when I think about Corey Brown, it makes me think about like the transfer portal, right? And how you could have a negative attitude about it, about how, oh, we're gonna lose players, etc. But at the same time, if it wasn't for the transfer portal, we wouldn't have a guy like Corey Brown. I mean, he's a guy who was at Ole Miss last season and was healthy last season. He simply couldn't get on the field. I mean, those SEC pitching staffs sometimes are so stacked that even a stud like Corey Brown doesn't get playing time. And so if it wasn't for the transfer portal, he would have had to stay there and maybe only pitch 10 innings this year or transfer to USF and sit out an entire year, and we wouldn't have even seen him until 2026. So, as much as the transfer portal can actually hurt a mid-major, it can also help a mid-major. Like we're getting a guy who, honestly, Ole Miss should have played him last year because of how good he is. But we're able to get him, and look at what he did. I mean, he threw almost 100 innings. Was had one of the lowest ERAs in the conference pretty much all season. Threw a complete game. Won us many games, kept us in many games. And what's cool about it too is like when I go to the fall practices, I try to get out to one or two, I can almost tell like immediately who's gonna be a good pitcher for us. And just the way he pounded the strike zone in that fall scrimmage, like I just knew he was gonna be good for us. And I remember, yeah, just awesome season. It was great to see it all come to fruition, and it was awesome.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, we're gonna kind of move through here. We have an award for top freshman. We ended up giving that to Nolan Bernard. Really, we didn't have a lot of freshmen that put in a lot of innings this year, but that doesn't mean he didn't have a good season for us. We saw a lot of good things out of Nolan. Like I said, that out he got in the tournament, that was a big spot for a young kid. So congratulations, Nolan. We'll move on now to most improved. I'll let you talk about that one.
Yeah, most improved. I'll go with this was a fun one to think about too, because I mean we had a lot of guys returning from last year. But you want, I mean, really ask yourself, okay, who made the biggest leap from last year to this year? I think the clear choice was Matt Rose. I mean, you're looking at a guy who, as a freshman, I mean, I think he batted like below 200. Like he barely got to play. When he did play, he wasn't able to do too much. As a sophomore, last year, he showed some growth. He hit like around 250s. OPS was in the 600s. It was trending up, but you could tell that he had like the goods to be better. And then every time you'd see in his summer baseball league, he'd be batting like almost 400, and you'd be like, man, that has to translate to USF at some point. It's still baseball. The ball's the same size. The players are the same players. And it finally did. So he batted like, 320 or something this year, OPS over 800, and was like clutch with that home run in the top conference tournament. And it's fun to watch. He's just fun to watch. Like, yeah, what are your thoughts on him?
He makes some plays at third base. You look at his stature, hey, I'm just as guilty as anybody. You look at his stature and you think, oh, probably not a third baseman. Start watching some ground balls go to that hot corner. Obviously, some things bounce over his head, but it is what it is. He makes the plays that you need to make as a third baseman, and he makes them well. But I agree, just absolutely fun to watch. And he's probably one of my favorite players on the roster, honestly. And I'm really, really, really going to be really excited to watch him play next year. As I don't believe I've seen anything on him. And again, just really hope he comes back. Move on now to our senior award. This is going to go to Jackson Mayo. Really, this is kind of like a senior award, a legacy award, just kind of somebody that's going to leave behind something, some sort of legacy here at USF. And really important, accolade for Jackson is he's going to leave USF in the top 10 in career home runs. Again, that just kind of speaks to the consistency of being here, being in the lineup on a relative consistent basis all 4 years that he was here, including that freshman season where he had 10 home runs. So again, just kind of like we talked about with Brodell, fun to watch you play for 4 years. Thank you, Jackson, for being here and letting us watch you play. What do you have?
Yeah, and I echo those sentiments entirely. I mean, he was just very fun to watch these 4 years, had a lot of great moments, and has etched his name in the record books with this program forever, yeah, I really hope that he gets an opportunity to continue his career as well. He's got all the tools that he needs to be successful as a pro. But yeah, I mean, just a great career. Great kid. I mean, got to talk to him a couple of times. A really nice family as well. That's the kind of people that you want to see in the program that you support. So I think a Legacy Award is a perfect name for that, actually.
Like I said, it's I can remember this play will always stick out of my head, but I remember I believe it was a game in UCF that
Oh
was a
yeah.
home run to right field. They have the, I don't know, 2.5 foot fence out there.
Oh, that
My
was great.
guy does not care, flips straight over that, makes the catch. I just remember jumping off of my seat whenever he pulled that one off, man. That was such a fun moment.
I was actually there in person.
Oh yeah, that's
Yeah,
awesome.
oh, dude, it was
That is
crazy.
awesome.
Like, I just saw him running to the outfield, and we see him disappear, and we're like, oh my God, is he okay? Like, what
Right?
the heck?
Yeah,
But
crazy.
yeah, no, I asked him about that when he came on our show, and he was saying like there's people that tailgate out there for the games, and like they were like trying to help him up, and like it's hilarious, man.
That's awesome. 29 career home runs. I just wanted to go ahead and put that out there. So, congratulations, Jackson. Well, before we wrap it up, we do kind of want to give some few thoughts. There is a big baseball tournament going on right now to crown a new NCAA champion. The Bruinette McEwen boys, we've got our D1 brackets, which, thanks to the madness that was the regional round, is looking a little rough across the board. Mark, actually, you're the leader, man. So I'll let you lead off here. What have you thinking about this tournament, man? What is standing out to you?
No, honestly, that may have been the best regional weekend like that we've seen. Like, I mean, especially since I've been following the sport more closely in the last 5 years, definitely the best one I've seen in that period. I have four of my eight Omaha teams still alive. National champion Oregon State is still alive. And you know what's interesting? I only have four out of eight teams alive, but my first and second in each bracket are still alive. So that's nice.
That is nice.
Yeah, I think that's Arkansas. I forget the exact teams, but it's been fun. And I don't know, man. I think I just wish that the NCAA baseball tournament would get the same like acknowledgement as like March Madness, because I mean it's just as good of TV. Maybe, I mean, in my opinion, maybe even better TV. But what are your thoughts on it?
Just a crazy, crazy weekend, man. Wright State knocks off the number one seed, the number one overall seed, not
Yeah,
just the
that's
number one
crazy.
seed in their region, the number one overall seed got knocked out by Wright State. Just insanity, and hey, that came after probably one of those controversial pitching change decisions in quite some time. They got a guy going out there no hit for six innings, decide to go to a reliever, end up losing it. But they end up coming back in the end. They didn't win. I think Wright State ended up winning that region, didn't they?
Yeah.
They ended up winning that whole region, after that.
Oh
But,
no, my bad. No, Murray State did.
Murray State won it.
Murray State won the region. But
Wright
Wright
State
State,
just
right?
eliminated, they
Vanderbilt.
eliminated Vanderbilt.
They did eliminate Vanderbilt. That was
And
significant.
then they lost in their regional final.
Yes,
But,
yes.
just absolute insanity. I
Yeah.
do still have four of my teams left too. My champion is LSU, who, hey, got an absolute run for their money,
I
for
know,
Little
dude.
Rock.
Oh my
And
God.
I think that's a testament too for this whole tournament. We talked about our pitching depth. I think pitching depth really across the board is a little, maybe a tick down, because I mean we saw a lot of high scores, especially later in the, as you got to kind of Saturday and
That's a
Sunday when
good
teams
point.
are
You know what
kind
I'll
of
say
deep,
too
man.
is a little
But
different about the regionals is it's held over one less day than the Clearwater tournament, like the AAC tournament. Like we go from Tuesday to Sunday. Regionals go from Friday to Monday. So I think like the it's even more compressed,
It is.
which is leading to these staffs just kind of crumbling by the end of the week.
Yeah, I think, and that's what you saw, especially with LSU and Little Rock. Little Rock, LSU tried to throw some guys, and Little Rock, they jumped on them because they're hitters. But then they bring in Cason Evans, and Cason Evans shuts them out for seven innings, because he's their All-American freshman,
Yeah.
which how the heck is that kid a freshman? But anyways, just pandemonium, and you love to see it. It makes for great TV. It makes for great tournaments. We're going to see some great super regionals this coming up weekend. Excited for those. My other team is North Carolina, so I'm rooting for the Tar Heels. Me and you have the same. So our four is like we have two of them that are different and two of them that are same.
Yeah, I'm looking at mine right now. So my winner of the bracket one would be Oregon State beating North Carolina in Omaha. And then bracket two would be Arkansas beating LSU in Omaha. But you have LSU winning the whole thing. Okay.
So I have LSU, and I had Texas beating. I had LSU beating Texas, who's out.
Okay.
And then I had North Carolina beating Vanderbilt.
Oh.
So my runner-ups are
All
out, but my
right.
winners are in.
Okay.
But
We'll see
hey,
how it shakes out.
it's gonna be fun, man. It's one of those things where, like, win or lose, man, it's just gonna be fun to watch.
Definitely.
I still believe in my Tigers. I think they got a really good lineup, man. They got some. When you got a guy nicknamed Bear and he's not your biggest hitter,
Yeah.
like,
I know.
man, they
It's
get some
and
absolute
those two
legs.
pitchers, I mean, Anson and
Cade
Anderson.
Anderson.
Yeah. Yeah.
They probably do have, they have a really good 1-2 punch, but
Yeah. Which sets up great if they make it to the Omaha Finals, three game series, but I guess we'll see.
we will see. It's gonna be fun to watch. Well, man, I think we're at that time. I think we've kind of ran our course. Do you have any final thoughts, things you want to leave the listeners off before we go?
No, I mean, the season is over, obviously, as we kind of wrap this up here. But, if you look back at what myself and Adam and John and Matt did last off season, Periodically in the off season, we like to drop a podcast here and there, try to get some different guests on, like maybe some of the professional Bulls players, former players that are in the pros right now is usually pretty fun. Just some different members of the USF baseball community, whether that be maybe an assistant coach that we haven't got to talk to yet. Different figures around the program. We had Jim Lauck last year. So we'll have some things in store for you all in the off season. Obviously kind of a more spread out cadence of content, but definitely stick with us, and we plan on kind of just improving it, every year. I mean, we would like to, something we've all discussed internally is getting more into video podcasts and how that could help expand the reach and even potential sponsorships in the future. Regarding, when we do video content, we can have your logo up during the show. We can even do that with some of our social media posts. And you look at the numbers of some of our posts, we're getting a lot of reach. So if anybody's listening to this and says, "Hey, I mean, I would like to sponsor the show," or merchandise wise, if you're company has merchandise, anything like that, we'll wear it during the show. So it's something to keep in mind for the future. And one last thing I'll say is one thing I have for the off season in mind, I want to get the merchandise store back up and give people opportunity to rep Brewing at McEwen. I had some people ask about that, so that's something that we'd like to do and have some time to do now that there's no games to follow and report on. So but yeah, appreciate everybody rocking with us all season, and we'll keep it going.
That is awesome. And that's just piggybacking right there on your last point, from all of us at Bruin and McEwen, thank you listeners, for downloading and listening and doing all of that. And, yeah, man, if you got a shirt you want me to wear, I'm a large, I'm a cheap date. I will rock it. I will tell everybody how comfortable it is and all of that good stuff. But,
Exactly.
yeah, stick with us in the off season, all the stuff we got coming up. We'll get guests. There's a fun recruiting class that we're going to be able to look at and break down at some point this summer.
Yep.
It's going to be absolutely fantastic. But till next time, Bulls fans, as always, go Bulls.
Go Bulls.